call this meeting of the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee to order. We are meeting remotely under House Rule 10.01. We will start out with taking a roll to see who's here today. Anna, please go ahead with the roll.
Chair Becker Finn.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Scott. Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Frazier.
Present.
Representative Grossel.
Present.
Representative Hurd.
Present.
Representative Hollins. Representative Johnson.
Present.
Representative Liebling.
Present.
Representative Long.
Present.
Representative Mortensen.
Present.
Representative Novotny.
Present.
Representative Farr.
Present.
Representative Robbins. Representative Vang. Representative Zhang.
All right, quorum is present. First, we will need to take care of the minutes for March 19th. Vice Chair Mueller, do I have a motion to move the minutes of March 19th?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair Mueller. I do see a note that Representative Robbins is here today. Any discussion to the minutes of March 19th? All right, not seeing any hands. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? All right, the minutes of March 19th, 2021 are approved. Today we have several budget presentations. It's that time of year and we've got updates after the February forecast. So we will get right to it. And first up is the judicial branch. And so welcome to the committee again, Mr. Shorba. Please introduce yourself for the record and then go ahead with your presentation.
Good morning, Chair Becker Finn and committee members. I'm happy to be here with you this morning to talk about the judicial branch supplemental budget request. For the record, my name is Jeff Shorba, and I serve as the state court administrator for the Minnesota Judicial Branch. A few months ago, I was before you to highlight the branch's initial budget request. And if you remember, we put forward a modest hold harmless budget request asking for $17.7 million to pay for anticipated health insurance increases and a 3% wage increase for judges and employees in the second year of the biennium. So at that time we made the request, the state was facing a $2.4 billion deficit, and the branch felt it was necessary to limit our request to continue to be good partners with the legislative and executive branches of government to face that dire fiscal situation. Since we made our initial request, the economic situation facing the state of Minnesota has drastically improved, as you know, with an anticipated $1.6 billion surplus for the next biennium. So recognizing this improved condition, but also understanding much of this surplus is the result of one-time federal funding, the branch has put together a small supplemental budget request focused on one-time funding. So the branch supplemental request is outlined on this slide. We are asking for a one-time appropriation to fund three items totaling $2.6 million for the biennium. And I'm going to provide a little bit more detail on each of these three items. The first is to fund critical improvements to the Minnesota Court Records Online application. So in 2020, the Minnesota Judicial Branch launched an initiative to redesign and implement the application, which provides internet access to many public district court records. This initiative was necessary as the current online records access system developed by a private vendor is outdated and will no longer be updated by the vendor. So we put in place a plan to put together what we're calling the Minnesota Court Records Online application. It's being developed in-house and will provide expanded access to public records, including the ability to download documents. It's being implemented in three phases. Phase one has been completed and allowed us to test the tool by allowing searches when the individual has a case number. We just launched phase one on March 17th and have had very strong positive results from the public and attorneys who are starting to use this system. Phase two is now in progress, which is going to allow additional ways to search for cases, such as by party name, attorney name, et cetera, so you don't have to have the case number in order to find cases. What we're asking for is funding to fund phase three, which is probably the most complicated part of the project. It's going to allow users to download most district court case records after paying an applicable copy access fee as designated in Minnesota statute. So what will happen is users are able to see the first page of any document, and then they can decide whether they want to download the document and pay the copy fee. So now when somebody comes to a courthouse and they want a document, they have to pay a copy fee. This will allow the system to do the same thing, but they can do it all remotely. You probably remember by statute, those copy fees are deposited in the state general fund. So we're asking for $850,000 to complete phase three of the project, which would be completed in 2022. The second request seeks one-time funding to fund some critical improvements to the Judicial Branch cybersecurity program. The Judicial Branch launched its cybersecurity program in fiscal year 2017. And the program is aimed at mitigating the branch's risk of major data breaches, data corruption, system outages, document data loss, and cyber attacks. So as we rely more on technology in the branch, especially as we've gone through this pandemic, our vulnerability and risk also increases. You may remember some of you were on the committee in fiscal year 2021. We had a biennial budget request where we asked the legislature for $5 million to support the cybersecurity program. The 2019 legislature appropriated $1.5 million for this effort. Currently, we are not asking for the additional $3.5 million. Instead, we are asking for $750,000 in one-time funding, which would support some hardware and software costs that we will incur in the next biennium to make sure our systems remain as safe as possible. The final request seeks a $1 million one-time appropriation to fund a competitive grant program for courthouse safety and security improvements under a process approved by the Chief Justice. The request is modeled after a similar $1 million appropriation made by the 2016 legislature. When that program was rolled out, the advisory committee overseeing grants received over $3.5 million in requests for improvements at courthouses across the state. So we believe the need is clearly demonstrated. Security continues to remain a concern for a variety of reasons at courthouses across Minnesota. And this program would fund a one-time matching grant program for things like courthouse security assessments, equipment, technology, or training needs. It was very successful when we did it back in 2017. We had 54 counties that received funds out of that $1 million that was allocated by the legislature. So recognizing our current fiscal situation, we are hopeful that some of these one-time fund requests could be funded by the legislature. We appreciate the fact that Governor Walz was willing to include our supplemental request in his recent supplemental budget. So I hope the committee will appreciate the judicial branch's willingness to consider these one-time funding items, and I stand ready to answer any of the committee's questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Shorba. We do have a couple minutes for questions. Vice Chair Moeller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Shorba, for the update. I have a question about the Court Records Online initiative. I believe it was slide number three. Mm-hmm. And I just want to make sure that parties are still able to access the records without a cost. I know in the federal system, they gave you like one free look and then you have to pay. And it's very cumbersome, I think, for the actual parties in a case. So just wondering if you could comment on that and maybe how our system differs from that federal system.
And sure. Mr. Shorba, actually, if you could turn off your share screen so we can see the folks who are talking, that would be great. And then you go ahead and answer the question. Thank you.
Certainly. Representative Mueller, Madam Chair, a couple things I'll mention about our system. The first is that you can look at the first page of any document for free, and a large percentage, well over half of our documents are one-page documents, so everyone will be able to see those for free. If you are a party to the case, obviously you'll have access to the documents by the fact that you'll be served documents in the case, so you will not have to pay for those particular documents as a party, so parties will be treated differently. And it's a small cost. I think our copy cost is about $8 for those who do have to actually want to download a document. So thank you for that question.
Follow-up, Vice Chair Moeller.
No, that's helpful. Thank you.
All right. I have a question, Mr. Shorba, and I'm wondering if you could tell me are you guys fully investigating any potential federal sources to pay for especially some of these one-time requests?
Chair Becker Finn, we are still waiting for some guidance from MMB on the, I guess it's called the ARP, American Recovery Program process. There are some of these things that might be eligible because they're sort of related to technology and pandemic kind of related costs. I think we have to submit those by April 5th. So we would try to include some there if we're not able to get an appropriation.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Shorba. And if you could let us know as soon as you find out anything, that would be greatly appreciated. Members, any additional questions for Mr. Shorba? All right. Well, thank you for bringing that in and for sharing that with us. And I'm sure if members think of questions afterwards, they're welcome to reach out to get further answers. So thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
All right, our next presentation is an update from the Department of Human Rights. Commissioner Lucero, if you could introduce yourself for the record and then go ahead with your testimony or with your presentation. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Rebecca Lucero and I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Human Rights. I'm going to share my screen to talk over this. So just give me one second as I get shared. And I'm hoping you're able to see this budget recommendation screen up.
Yep, looks good.
Great, good. All right, so my name is Rebecca Lucero. Also joining me today is Eric Armanconkey, the Government Relations Director. If you ever have any questions or follow-up, please feel free to reach out to either of us, happy to help. You've seen this slide before, so I'm gonna move through these quickly. Our goal and mission at the end of the day is to make Minnesota discrimination-free. There's two important things to note about our budget. First, the vast majority of our funds come from the general fund. And second, for expenditures, we are a people-powered agency, which means the vast majority of our funding goes to pay employees to do the work every single day. The governor's supplemental budget recommendation is for $12.2 million biennium. And it does four things. Two of them we've already talked about. The two new things here is first, it supports the core department function by increasing the investigative capacity. Second, it strengthens the source of income protection and housing. And then the third and fourth is the operating adjustment and then the workforce and equal pay certificate fee adjustment. I'm going to spend my time talking about the first. So this one is really important to our agency, and this has to do with increasing investigative capacity. This is a targeted investment, small investment. We're looking at under 500K a year for the biennium. And it's to hire additional investigators to make sure that we are completing our investigations effectively and efficiently. I just wanna highlight real quick the OLA report that came out before COVID. It's about February of 2020. And it stressed throughout that there is simply not enough capacity to be able to do the work correctly. And so this would benefit both respondents and charging parties to make sure our work is done as quickly and correctly as possible. The next has to do with the strengthening source of income protections in housing. And this has to do with a bill that Minnesota Housing is moving that prohibits a source of income discrimination against Minnesotans who access financial support. An example of this is federal housing choice preference. This is a source of income that's used to secure housing. So this would prevent discrimination when accessing housing using those kinds of income. And so this would provide us the capacity to be able to do that work. Just quickly mention the operating adjustment to revisit this. The three biggest issues at play here with the operating adjustment is first, cost increases to minute IT. Second, health insurance increases. And then some of it has to do with step increases. Vast majority is minute costs and health insurance. And we spent time talking about the workforce and equal pay certificate adjustments last time. So if there's any questions or follow up on that, happy to address them, but I'll move on from that today. I always like to share whenever I have the opportunity to present just a little bit about why we do this work every day. March is Women's History Month. Yesterday was Equal Pay Day, and we've been able to talk about equal pay in Minnesota and some steps around that before. But it does give me an opportunity to also highlight a settlement that was reached with Villiam Industries at the beginning of this month. This is an employer who did not have a single woman working for them in their production line for years, did not hire any women. Typical comparable Twin Cities employers hire 25 to 35% women. So to see not even a single woman is a problem. And the way we even found out about this case is because there was a woman who applied for a position and was turned down because she was a woman. We worked with Villiam. They understood that there is a problem here. So they are working with us as part of the settlement to recruit and hire women, to update their policies and procedures, and to change their trainings. We're excited to work with Villiam on these changes so that we can make sure that everyone in Minnesota has access to employment, be them man or woman, and we want to make sure that no one is discriminated against simply because they're women. So blatant discrimination, and I was really proud of the work of the agency to move this forward, and this is an example of the kind of investigation that we do. Thank you so much for your time today. I'll stand for any questions.
All right, thank you, Commissioner. Members, any questions about the supplemental budget request? All right. I guess you did a good job, Commissioner. I'm sure, as always, members can reach out if they do have questions, but and the slides should be in your packets as well, members. So thank you, Commissioner, for sharing that with us this morning.
Thank you.
All right, members, moving right along. Next up, we have the tax court. So I think we have two judges with us this morning, Judge Chien and Judge De La Pena. If you could introduce yourself for the record and then go ahead with your presentation.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Beckerfin. This is Wendy Tien. I'm the Chief Judge of the Minnesota Tax Court, and I'm here with two colleagues today. We have the full court before you. I'm here with my colleagues, Judge Jane Bowman and Judge Brad De La Pena, both of whom recently elected me as Chief Judge of the Court. So I'm the new Chief Judge of the Court. And I want to thank the committee for having us here today. We were recently before you a couple months ago, so I don't want to repeat anything that we said previously. We just want to thank you for having us here again so that we can give you a brief update on our recent operations during the pandemic and then to speak with you about the proposed budget. Just to give you a brief update on how things have been going during the pandemic, I think like all courts throughout the state and really throughout the nation, it was a little bit of a transition process early on, but I think the court has done a good job transitioning during the pandemic. This was really facilitated by some steps we had taken before the pandemic to be, I would say, accessible to the public in ways other than face-to-face in a courtroom. Before the pandemic, the court already had a telephonic hearing procedure in place that we used largely for, I would say, proceedings where pro se litigants were located outside the metro area, and also in matters that didn't really require involved in courtroom trial or courtroom hearing. And we were able to transition pretty much all proceedings that were non-evidentiary to that process. The parties call into court reporter and matters are transcribed in that fashion. Frequent practitioners before the court were already pretty used to this procedure. And I think unrepresented parties and counsel who don't frequently appear before the court were pleased to discover that they didn't have to encounter long delays before the court to hear, to have their matters heard. So using our telephonic procedure was an easy way to avoid any real pandemic delays. As far as trials go, we have begun employing a remote trial procedure. We've had some fully remote trials using Zoom. We've also been using Microsoft Teams for some other remote proceedings, and that's working pretty well. So on top of that, we also have been preparing our courtroom for the possibility of returning to court. Not all of our proceedings take place in the MJC, but to the extent they do, we've updated our courtroom to employ some technology, you know, using large video screens and plugins for counsel and unrepresented parties who bring laptops and that sort of thing. So this will minimize the need for parties to approach each other, to approach witnesses, to approach the bench, and it'll allow for a much more socially distanced experience even within our own courtroom. And we think this will allow for a much more safe transition going forward. So having said that, I'd like to turn this over to Judge Bowman to talk about the proposed budget. And then after that, we're happy to take any questions you have. Judge Bowman?
Judge Bowman, if you could introduce yourself for the record and then go ahead.
Yes, thank you. And good morning, Chair Beckerfin and members of the committee. My name is Jane Bowman, judge on the Minnesota Tax Court. And I'd like to briefly update you on our requested budget for the next biennium. The goal of our budget is really to maintain the current level of services. Our request is included in the governor's budget. For the first year, we are asking for 1.8 million second year, 1.82 in the second year, 1.84, which represents a 1.4% increase over the last biennium. And that change is to cover modest increases in compensation as well as anticipated rent. That's really the brief overview of the budget. And all three of us are here and available to answer any questions the committee might have.
All right, thank you. Vice Chair Moeller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and hello, Your Honors. It's good to see you here. Thanks for being here. I just had a question about some of the remote proceedings and if you find that you would like to continue on with some of those, even when we're out of the pandemic.
Good morning, Judge
Tan. Yeah, no problem.
Good morning, Representative Moeller, and thank you for your question. I actually appreciate your asking that because it's really a good spotlight on what the court has been able to do to make our proceedings really, I think, more accessible to the public. As I said earlier, before the pandemic, we did have a form of remote proceeding, which was telephonic hearings. And it's not really the same as using something like Microsoft Teams or Zoom to have a, you know, face-to-face kind of proceeding with the public. But having used Zoom and Teams with the public for certain types of proceedings, I have to say, and I think my colleagues will agree, that we will probably retain that technology for use even after the pandemic is over, even though it probably will not be our primary means of conducting proceedings, maybe not full trials, which are a little bit awkward to some degree. You've got documents and it can be hard. Obviously, we're all here today doing screen sharing and all that. But it also can save time and it can save resources for people who are located in the non-metro counties who may not want to travel, or from time to time, even on a hybrid basis, if we're in a courtroom, but there's a witness who on a particular day couldn't travel and it would have resulted in a delay of the trial to require that party to travel, even though they were otherwise available. It can be good to accommodate parties in that fashion. So I do think that we will probably retain aspects of that technology because it can be really useful to maintain flexibility and accessibility.
Any follow-up, Vice Chair Moeller?
None. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Yep. All right. Any other questions, members? All right. Well, thank you for your presentation today, and we will move right along to the next presentation. The next presentation is from the Uniform Laws Commission. I believe Michelle Timmons is here, as well as some others. If you could introduce yourself for the record and then go ahead with your presentation.
Yes, Madam Chair and members, I'm Michelle Timmons. I'm a Minnesota Uniform Law Commissioner and the former reviser of statutes. And with me here today is Commissioner Kim Lowe, who you will recall led a presentation earlier during this session about the Uniform Law Commission and what it does. And so I'm not going to repeat that, because you now know that we draft and then advocate for laws that can be enacted in all 50 states. Plus, you have the example of Representative Mueller's bill, House File 113, Senate File 395, the Uniform Recognition and Enforcement of Canadian Orders for Protection Act, which I'm pleased to say was signed into law by the governor on Tuesday of this week. So we have a uniform law enactment this year. So I'm not going to go into a lot of background about that. And the budget request is probably one of the smallest and simplest budgets that you have before you. The budget request is for $100,000 per year, or $200,000 for the biennium. And this request is at the governor's recommendation. And what it does is allows for the continued level of service by the volunteer commissioners in Minnesota, as we do all volunteer our time. And so in terms of budget detail, that is also very simple. There are literally two cost centers in the Uniform Law Commission budget. One is the annual dues that Minnesota pays to the Central Uniform Law Commission. And those are anticipated during the upcoming biennium to be $63,600 per year. And those dues are based on the state's population. So for example, the state of California pays much greater dues than does the state of Minnesota. The remainder of the appropriation is used to reimburse travel costs for the annual meeting that we have, which usually lasts 7 or 8 days. And we go through and read line by line, word for word, propose acts. And if you can imagine a room with 300 lawyers in it, people get up at microphones and make amendments, suggest amendments, make comments. And we ultimately come out with the number of products at the end of the week. Now, of course, last year, because of the pandemic, those meetings were all held virtually. But in the upcoming biennium, the ULC is looking at maybe a hybrid approach for 2021, and we're all hoping that we can be back to traveling by 2022. So we are asking for the $100,000 a year, $200,000 per biennium to fund the dues and the travel reimbursement. And the reimbursement is all at the state policy levels. That request is a small increase, $2,000 per year, which is, I think, a little less than 2%. And again, that is at the governor's recommendation. So I don't know if Commissioner Lowe has anything to add. I guess that's it for the presentation, unless there are questions from committee members.
All right, thank you very much. Members, any questions for the Uniform Law Commissioners? All right, I guess not. Well, thank you very much for joining us again today. We appreciate the work you do and appreciate having you here today. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. With that, members, we do have one bill on the calendar today, and that is one of my bills. So I'm going to virtually hand the gavel over to Vice Chair Moeller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so, members, the bill before us today is House File 2257. Chair Becker-Finn, would you like to move that House File 2257 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill?
So moved, Madam Chair.
All right. Go ahead and tell us about your bill.
All right. So this is a bill that I brought forward last biennium as well. Didn't quite make it across the finish line. It's a little bit of an odd bill. And it was actually brought to my attention by a now retired city manager in one of my cities. So as you'll see in the bill summary, currently every city within the state of Minnesota gets at least two-thirds of their fine revenue back to the local municipality, except for suburban cities in Ramsey County. So, and Hennepin County also has a unique setup, but it's essentially this weird sort of unfair piece in the law where the suburban cities in Ramsey County get a smaller percentage of fine revenue than any other municipalities in the state. And we have attempted to find out exactly why that is. There have been I guess people have sort of guessed that it had something to do with the building of the White Bear Lake Courthouse many years ago, you know, some shifting of funds as a way to pay for something. But we're trying to make that put these cities on the same footing as everybody else. And that's what we're doing with this bill. I do have one testifier. It's a city manager from the city of Roseville, and would turn it over to him for some brief testimony.
Thank you, Chair Becker-Finn. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Trudgian. I hope I'm pronouncing that the right way. If you can introduce yourself to the committee and go ahead and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Vice Chair Moeller, and hello, Chair Becker-Finn, and good morning to the rest of the committee. My name is Pat Trudgian. I'm the city manager for the city of Roseville. On behalf of the suburban municipalities in Ramsey County, I'm here in support of passage of House File 2257, which will more equitably distribute fines, penalties, forfeitures, and violations of the law in our communities. I wasn't aware of this disparity in the distribution of these proceeds until recently when Chair Becker-Finn brought forward a bill in 2019, as she mentioned. Under current law, Ramsey County, in Ramsey County, St. Paul receives two-thirds of the fine while the rest of us only receive 50%. As was mentioned, and I'm not sure why Ramsey County is treated differently under state law when every other local governmental unit throughout the state receives two-thirds of the fine of the fines, penalties, and forfeiture revenues. I'm here to simply ask that Roseville, along with the other 15 municipalities in Ramsey County, be treated the same as St. Paul and the rest of the state. To be clear, we do not see this bill as an opportunity to write more tickets and gain more revenue. In Roseville, for instance, we have seen a steady decrease in our citations for traffic stops, with 85% of the stops now resulting in only a warning and not a citation. I believe this bill is pretty straightforward and will not create any other precedent or special exception. It will, just as I said, just treat Roseville and the rest of Ramsey County municipalities the same as St. Paul and the rest of the state. So in closing, I ask for your support in House File 2257. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Trudgian. And I believe we're going to go through some member discussion right now before we take the amendments, see if we have any questions for either Chair Becker-Finn or Mr. Trudgian. So I'll just give members a moment to see if there are any questions. Okay, I'm not seeing any hands raised. So next we will go to the A1 amendment. And Representative Johnson, I believe the A1 amendment is yours.
Chair members, I bring this forward because like the testifier said, I think all the counties and everybody should be treated equal. The cities of in Ramsey County should be treated the same as the city of St. Paul, just like every other city. I also believe that the cities and counties across the state, we should all be treated equal. There's no reason that the cities in Ramsey County should not be treated the same. Also, there's no reason that the city of Minneapolis should be treated different than the city of St. Paul. That's why I bring this forward, to make all cities and all counties treated equally. But I do see that Representative Robbins has an amendment that actually takes care of that a little farther. So I'm going to withdraw this and let Representative Robbins deal with it, with the DE amendment that takes even does this even better.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. So Representative Johnson has withdrawn the A1 amendment, and then we'll move to the DE1 amendment from Representative Robbins. Go ahead and tell us about your amendment, Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Beckerfin, for bringing this bill. I hope you see this as a friendly amendment. When I first heard you present this bill in committee last year, when I was freshman, I had no idea this was how the thing worked, right? So I was very surprised to hear that any of this money went to the general fund, which I don't think the general fund needs it. I don't think that's where it belongs. So after we heard your bill in committee last year, I drafted a bill of my own that would say all these fees stay in the municipality or subdivision, local subdivision where the crime occurred. And so my amendment simply says 100% of the money, the fees, stays in the municipalities or the counties. None of it goes to the general fund. I feel like part of the reason we have excessive fees and fines is because we were trying to prop up the general fund at an earlier recession. I don't even know when it was, but that time has passed. We have a surplus, and I think all of this money should stay with the city. So that's what the DE does. It just says 100% is staying with the city. So I offer it and welcome any discussion.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. Chair Beckerfin, would you like to address the DE amendment?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I can tell you that, so we don't have the updated fiscal note for the underlying bill for this year, but last year it was a cost of $173,000 per year. And I would urge members to vote no on the DE1. I understand what Representative Robbins is getting at, but unfortunately, to try to do this right now would be a very large cost to the general fund. It would make it impossible for us to fund all the other good things that we need to be funding. So would ask members for a no vote on the DE1.
Thank you, Chair Beckerfin. Do we have more discussion on the DE amendment?
Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Representative Robbins.
Thank you. Just in response to that, I mean, the cost of this from what we know, and I know there is no overall fiscal note for mine, but it's only 20% more than the cost Chair Beckerfin referenced. It's a very small amount for the state general fund, but it's a huge amount for cities on a relative basis. So I would just encourage members to think about this differently, and I ask for your support for the amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. So I would like to give members a minute to unmute themselves so we can move to the vote. Okay, all those in favor of adopting the DE1 amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Any final words on your bill, Representative Beckerfin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank Mr. Trudgeon for speaking on behalf of all the other cities as well. Last year, we were able to have a couple other city managers testify in support as well, but recognizing the time in the session and the amount of time that they would all basically be taking to say the same thing, Mr. Trudgeon took one for the team today and being available to testify. Again, this is just about putting Ramsey County suburban cities on the same footing as everybody else, and appreciate members' consideration. Thank you, Madam Chair. Would renew my motion that House File 2257 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Judiciary Finance Omnibus Bill.
Thank you, Chair Beckerfin. So House File 2257 is laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Bill. And I'll just close us out, if that's okay, Chair Beckerfin. Members, our next hearing will be tomorrow, and the agenda is posted on the committee webpage. With that, our meeting is adjourned.